I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for rolling. Thank you so much for rolling. I hope everybody out here is doing as best as you can. I hope that you are tuned in not only to this show, but to yourself and the source energy. I want to send blessings out to everyone. And I like to get vulnerable on this show because I don't have anybody at home to talk to you guys, so. No, for real, I feel like in sharing our journey, in storytelling, in touching in with each other, we can sustain the common thread of humanity, of life, not just humanity, but with nature. And all the energy forces, seen and unseen. The bonds between us are important as they're doing what they're doing in the governments and the war machine and the food machine and the prison machine and the capitalist machine. Okay. So they're doing what they're doing, and we have to do what we do to stay cohesive with a shared vision of life, because the mongers of death seem to be in control and they seem to be winning, but it's only because they have nuclear weapons. But that's okay. That's okay. They've had them for a while. That's okay. We must not fragment. So as I'm thinking about my purpose in life, as I know many people are, and what we can do to tighten our little part of the web and tend to my own mental health in the process, and work and eat and sleep and visit with friends and cohorts with a decent attitude, do all of that with a decent attitude. It keeps coming back to love, yo. It's just the whisper on the wind. It just shows up everywhere as my part in this whole thing. So, as you know, we must fight. What must we fight for, and how do we fight, is what is on my mind quite often. Because, as Audre Lorde says, the master's tools will not dismantle the master's house. It's very tempting to resort to violence, to meet hate with hate, to meet an argument and a popping vein with an argument and a popping vein. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Yada, yada, yada. I saw a quote on the internet once, and I don't know. It was attributed to Martin Luther King, but I don't know if it's true. You know, they throw quotes around on the internet. And watch out now, since Khalil Gibran is public domain, the memes are forthcoming in the cab radio. Follow at in the cab radio. The feel-good memes are coming. But, no, it was attributed to Martin Luther King, and the quote was pretty much like, what would you do at the end of the world if you knew the world was absolutely ending? And, you know, he says, I would plant a tree. I'm going to tell you, the opposite of death, no. There's a balance. Creation is very powerful. Creation energy is very powerful. So when I think about the frustration and I get all spent out, the first thing I want to do that is a creative, life-affirming thing is make art. Some people garden, you know. I tried that for a while. I build things for a living or renovate things. And it's the creation energy is a great release. So I have this book here. It's huge. It came out last year, so it is not in public domain. I'm going to talk around it a bit. This is 2022. I don't know. I subtract 2 years off of everything for COVID. Even if it happens after COVID, I still take 2 COVID years off. Because time stopped making sense. Am I right? Anyway, this is called Gathering Blossoms Under Fire, and it's the Journals of Alice Walker, edited by Valerie Boyd. And I'm not going to bring this to the book club. I was looking for something to, just something the other day. And yes, yesterday I was going through the books and I'm like, what are we going to talk about tomorrow? You know, but this had been on my mind and I thought I would like to cozy up with Alice Walker's journals. You know, my journals are getting full right now. You know, speaking of what to do with energy and how to vision and how to dream and how to create. And journaling, I resisted for so long, you know. I mean, who wants a paper trail of this day and age? But at this point, we are so surveilled that I'm like, fine, like, see it. It, you know, like, what? And that comes with truth and vulnerability, right? If we can stand in our truth and be secure in what we believe in, whatever it is, if you're snooping through my journals and I give you permission and Valerie Boyd didn't edit it out for me and you got your hands on it and you saw something you didn't want to see, that's what you get for being nosy. That's not on me, because human beings have feelings and private thoughts and we're allowed to have them. And if they get shared, we have to be secure in ourselves enough to know that we're doing the best we can. That's why right action is important. And our thoughts are our thoughts and our feelings are our feelings, and they move and they change and they don't make us who we are. Alice Walker, the brave woman that she is, and I know that this, what is this, like 500 pages plus is not even touching her 70 something years of writing her thoughts down. I'm sure that there's probably a library full of Alice Walker's journals, but we have a taste here, and I appreciate her bravery as always. This piece opens the book. It's called While Love is Unfashionable. While love is unfashionable, let us live unfashionably. Seeing the world a complex ball in small hands, love our blackest garment. Let us be poor in all but truth and courage, handed down by the old spirits. Let us be intimate with ancestral ghosts and music of the undead. While love is dangerous, let us walk bareheaded beside the great river. Let us gather blossoms under fire. While Love is Unfashionable by Alice Walker. Love is indeed unfashionable in a society built upon war and bloodshed. It's so uncool. It's so cringe. You know, sometimes you ever feel that? Like genuine. In the land of Captain America, who do we put opposite? Who do we stand against? The war machine, the capitalist meat grinder, the eater of hands and hearts and minds. Who do we stand against that? Ourselves. We put ourselves there. I think that's a deep message of the nonviolent movement. Dr. King and others. Champion, I just keep mentioning Dr. King because I feel like I got so intimate with him over the past few months reading A Knock at Midnight, sort of consumed with it. And I still participate in social media and I see people just, we're continually shooting down a love ethic. I met an artist the other day, and this is covered in the Bell Hooks as well, but I met an artist the other day, and she's working on an exhibition, and she shared the title with me, I Kill You Because I Love You. And our society is so built up on abuse, looking like love, and this is covered in the hooks, that it's hard to envision laying down and presenting oneself in a Because laying down sounds bad, but when I don't mean it like acquiescing. I mean it as in like, it's like that game of chicken, you know, that I've seen protesters do with the cops, with nonviolent protesters do, and you go limp, and you just make them, you make them work for dragging you off. You don't go, you don't run. I'm getting off topic, but to put yourself in front of danger for a cause, which a cause is there's lives behind causes. The ecology cause of saving Mother Earth, all of our lives are on the line for that. The people who are fighting to save the planet, to save the water, to save the air, to save the land from fracking, they're fighting for all of us. You know, who's that billionaire that you're trying to be like, who are they fighting for? This is not a place for me to live on the planet. So anyway, I digress. And I want to talk about Khalil Gibran a little bit. I'm going to read a couple of excerpts from an article that I found when I was looking up the end of the copyright for the prophet. Which is the end of the copyright road for the prophet is the name of this article. But I was looking up the public domain information. And this is a story from December 31st, 2018 by Glenn Khalim. Glenn is a Khalil Gibran research historian and filmmaker. And this is a very nice article. It's from KhalilGibran.com. And there's a lot of great information there. I was very surprised at the wealth. And then the Poetry Foundation has a very extensive biography of Gibran on there. He was born in, 1885, died in 1931. And he immigrated to the United States, 1883, sorry. He immigrated to the United States in 1895 when he was 12 with his mom and his siblings. Okay, so he was born in Lebanon. This was not contrived that I picked to work with Gibran as the war escalates now in Lebanon. The walkie-talkie explosions, I guess you guys heard about those. As we're still funding a genocide. Multiple at the same time, but the one on topic is in the Middle East. So, talking about love here does not make it visible, because I'm not talking about what's happening over there right now. Or what's happening with the police killing people here right now. Okay? Planting flowers, y'all. Gathering blossoms under fire. I know that I'm all over the map. You're in the cab with me, I'm driving. It's a bumpy road. We gotta take dips and turns and swerves. Gathering blossoms under fire. Just take a minute and think about what that concept looks like. That's what we're doing right here. Gibran is a blossom. Alice Walker is a blossom. We are under fire. It's really simple. And speaking of which, according to this article, The Prophet was released not long after World War I. And its message quickly resonated with the grieving world. During the darkness of World War II, the article says, in December 1937, the book had sold 129,000 copies. 129,000 copies. It sold out of its first printing, which was 1,300 copies, in the first month it was published in 1923. Alfred Knopf, he thought it, the people who bought the book were members of a cult. You know, and now... Today, 100 years later, The Prophet is considered by this author, Glenn Cullum, the first self-help book, okay, which I think is really funny. It sold over 10 million copies and has inspired works such as M. Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled, which we've talked about on this show, and Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. And I'm so giddy that this book is public domain now. It has survived so long. Here's another interesting factoid. When the United States government created a not-for-profit organization called the Council on Books in Wartime and established the Armed Services Edition of Books, a collection of pocket-sized reads for its soldiers on the front lines, the profit was included. Out of 1,322 suggested titles, it was the only book of poetry to be selected. This book, according to this article, is requested by prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. Isn't that interesting? It's so interesting to me. The late biographer and Gibran scholar, Professor Suhail Bushri, who founded the Khalil Gibran Chair for Values and Peace at the Maryland University, sums up the mystery of why the prophet is so popular. Here's the quote. In truth, the prophet is a work of such universal appeal, for Gibran's purpose was a lofty one, and his belief in the unity of being, which led him to call for universal fellowship and the unification of the human race, is a message which retains its potency today, as do the messages of all great poets. Inspired by his experiences in a country far from the land of his origins, he strove to resolve cultural and human conflict, in the process developing a unique genre of writing and transcending the barriers of East and West as few have done before or since. He became not only Gibran of Lebanon, but Gibran of America. Indeed, Gibran, the voice of global consciousness, a voice which increasingly demands to be heard in the continuing age of anxiety. As came to me for us to choose this book for the book club. And by us, I say me. But you're here, so it's us together. It's the vibe. All right, y'all. So I'm gonna read something from it. Are you ready? When I get back, we'll start at the beginning, and we'll read the setup and everything. I have a note that I can't find at the moment because I threw my phone out of the room because it selectively silences. But I had a note about how Gibran wrote this, who helped him edit it, who was a lady benefactor of his who supported him for his entire artistic life. He died at 48 years old, very young, cirrhosis of the liver. Okay. He was an alcoholic and had been struggling with his health for over a decade before he succumbed to liver failure. It's tough being a poet. It's tough feeling so many things. He's an artist since he was a very small boy. And so anyway, my notes on how this came to be written and how upon his death, there were some controversies about the manuscripts and the things that he did or did not get to finish writing. And this book, The Prophet, was going to be part of a trilogy. The trilogy, let's see if I can get it here. At his death, Gibran was working on The Garden of the Prophet, which was to be the second volume in a trilogy begun by the Prophet. It's the story of al-Mustafa's return to his native land and deals with the humanity's relationship with nature. And of the third volume, The Death of the Prophet. And of the death of the prophet, only one sentence was written. And he shall return to the city of Orphalis, and they shall stone him in the marketplace, even unto death, and he shall call each stone a blessed name. So as I jump into the middle of this collection, I wanted to frame up who is talking, who is the prophet. He's an exiled oracle. And the people come to him when they see his ship and he's in the market square and they're asking him questions. And a man said, "Speak to us of self-knowledge." And he answered, saying, "Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and the nights, but your ears thirst for the sound of your heart's knowledge. You would know in words that which you have always known in thought. You would touch with your fingers the naked body of your dreams, and it is well you should. The hidden wellspring of your soul must needs rise and run murmuring to the sea, and the treasure of your infinite depths would be revealed to your eyes. But let there be no scales to weigh your unknown treasure, and seek not the depths of your knowledge with staff or sounding line. For self is a sea boundless and measureless. Say not, 'I have found the truth,' but rather, 'I have found a truth.' Say not, 'I have found the path of the soul.' Say rather, 'I have met the soul walking upon my path.' For the soul walks upon all paths. The soul walks not upon a line, neither does it grow like a reed. The soul unfolds itself like a lotus of countless petals." Get it? Marinate on it. You can find this little book everywhere. I mean, there's so many copies out there. Used and abused, all loved. Khalil Gibran, the prophet. Happy anniversary, 101 years. Of course, I tripped myself up down a little bit of a rabbit hole. I had chosen three pieces that I was going to read today, and I didn't put my post-its. And I have an astrology app that actually said to do post-its, and I didn't. So I picked another piece that wasn't on the list, and I read through it. And it's just, these words are just like butter, you know. Gibran's words are like butter. And I'd like to share a little bit about the woman named Mary Haskell, who was Gibran's patron and good friend. He came to Boston without a formal education and a very limited knowledge of English. And so he had, according to this article from Glenn Cullum from KhalilGibran.com, the end of the copyright row for The Prophet, which is my reference material for now, because this is new. When I get back with you, you know, maybe we'll look into the times like we did with Martin Luther King. We'll break down a timeline and see what was happening in Lebanon and the United States at this time of Gibran's life. He was under-celebrated in the States, as they do. You know, the literati here were into a different line of white poets. And so he was not highly praised here in his beginning stages. Of course, like I said, the publisher laughed at him, but look at it now. But he was very, very celebrated in Lebanon and was credited for bringing in a new, less stuffy, more accessible style of writing that was based on the classical style there. And as y'all know, you know, historically, Arabic literature is renowned. And so the Sufi poets and all of the work out of that region had a certain established, how do you say, well, they just had a structure that made it difficult for some people to grasp. And so some people consider Gibran to be too simple, too base. I love him for that reason. It makes mysticism so accessible. It makes the inner journey so much more relatable, you know. And I don't know if that was the way that he learned English, or as I'm learning, and Mary Haskell Minnie's influence. Mary Haskell was an educator, a philanthropist, and a traveler. And they met in Boston. And according to Kalim here in his write-up, her devotion, care, and love for the bilingual artist she financially supported can be traced as far back as 1912, when he told her of his determination to write in English and his plans for the yet untitled, quote-unquote, my book, built around the teachings of an, quote-unquote, island god in exile. It would take a full 11 years more to evolve into the work we now know as The Prophet. From the beginning in June 1914, he sought her comments on most of his English output as it was being written and rewritten. Here's the quote that Gibran wrote of the corrections that she made. Your blessed touch makes every page dear to me. The punctuations, the added spaces, the change of expressions in some places, the changing of buts to ands, and the dropping of several ands. All these things are just right. That's from the Chapel Hill papers. So Glenn Kalim, who wrote this article, end of the copyright road for The Prophet, he's an adept Gibran scholar, researcher. So I trust what he's talking about. And apparently there were many journals and letters that were recovered after Gibran's death that were fought over. Some really cool stuff that the homies know. When he died, he willed the royalties to all of his works to the town in which he was born. And all of that got caught up with lawyers and city officials. There were two murders around Khalil Gibran royalties in Lebanon. Can you believe that? It's wild. He's got a really wild story. Really interesting how people can murder over money for writings on peace. So wild. What are humans? Capitalism. Let's see. I'm going to change it again now. Here's one. And then a scholar said, speak of talking. And he answered, saying, you talk when you cease to be at peace with your thoughts. And when you can no longer dwell in the solitude of your heart, you live in your lips. And sound is a diversion and a pastime. And in much of your talking, thinking is half murdered. For thought is a bird of space, that in a cage of words may indeed unfold its wings, but cannot fly. There are those among you who seek the talkative through fear of being alone. The silence of aloneness reveals to their eyes their naked selves, and they would escape. And there are those who talk and without knowledge or forethought reveal a truth which they themselves do not understand. And there are those who have the truth within them, but they tell it not in words. In the bosom of such as these, the spirit dwells in rhythmic silence. When you meet your friend on the roadside or in the marketplace, let the spirit in you move your lips and direct your tongue. Let the voice within your voice speak to the ear of his ear. For his soul will keep the truth of your heart as the taste of the wine is remembered when the color is forgotten and the vessel is no more. Wow. Khalil Gibran, the prophet, that's on talking. Such a lovely diversion and pastime to talk to you. I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in, for listening, for thinking in silence, for sitting with the words, for sitting with the feelings. I really hope that each petal of each blossom that we share, that blow around these airwaves, KMRD, to you, I just hope they make your world a little bit better. Sure does for me. I don't know, living in my lips. These wise people, man, you know, it's a little mean. All right, look, I'm gonna do one more and then I'm gonna get out of here, because this is the one I came up on the break, and it was cool, and I'm not trying to say that I'm anything or you're anything. We are this to each other. Then said a teacher, speak to us of teaching. And he said, no man can reveal to you aught but that which already lies half asleep in the dawning of your knowledge. The teacher who walks in the shadow of the temple among his followers gives not of his wisdom, but rather of his faith and his lovingness. If he is indeed wise, he does not bid you enter the house of his wisdom, but rather leads you to the threshold of your own mind. The astronomer may speak to you of his understanding of space, but he cannot give you his understanding. The musician may sing to you of the rhythm which is in all space, but he cannot give you the ear which arrests the rhythm, nor the voice that echoes it. And he who is versed in the science of numbers can tell of the regions of weight and measure, but he cannot conduct you thither. For the vision of one man lends not its wings to another man. And even as each one of you stands alone in God's knowledge, so must each one of you be alone in his knowledge of God and in his understanding of the earth. Khalil Gibran on teaching. We're sharing. And all we can do is hope for a common goal. And us living together on this big blue marble. Everything else you do, it's your business, as long as you don't hurt anybody. Okay. Let's try to live in peace. All right, y'all. I love you. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. No Jerry Springer. Yes, Jerry Springer. I don't know if you remember. I think he used to say that. I don't know how I started saying it, but it sounds really great. No throwing chairs. No pulling out weaves. Love you.